So the acharyas are speaking about udipana. Udipana means those things that will trigger off our remembrance of the spiritual world. And really, we need that. Just as when we say that the birth reminds us of Govindan Hill, then of course we can we can think more about Govindan Hill. Govardhan also exists in the spiritual world. However, in the spiritual world, Govardhan is much bigger, unlimitedly greater than here. So here, only there is a smaller portion. So from the Srimad Bhagavatam, from the 11th canto, chapter 14, text 16. With the dust of my devotees' lotus feet, I desire to purify the material worlds, which are situated within me. Thus I always follow the footsteps of my pure devotees, who are free from all personal desire, wrapped in thought of my pastimes, peaceful, without any feelings of enmity, and of equal disposition everywhere. So of course, with that, we first turn to our spiritual masters, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. In Chaitanya Charitamrita says, Vande Gurun, he offers his obeisances to not one spiritual master, but to all spiritual masters. The current spiritual master, the previous acharyas, in that way. But of course, in one sense, every devotee is fulfilling this function, that the dust of my devotee's lotus feet is purifying the material worlds to its extent, everyone. The other day, we had an interesting discussion because we were in a Sankirtan meeting in Germany with all the book distributors who went out. And we were discussing how many times Krishna consciousness may come from someone who himself is not really practicing seriously, but who has some faith. And in other words, the Krishna consciousness is not complete in that person and may have never fructified to the point that that person takes up Krishna consciousness. And still, they can pass on Krishna consciousness to so many others. And it happens like that. For example, in my town, there were not that many people who even knew about Krishna. Not so many. There were not many people who would speak about Krishna. And then of the few who did know something about Krishna, they didn't follow all the regulated principles. In fact, some of them didn't follow any at all. But still, they had faith in Krishna. And so they sometimes spoke about Krishna. And that very fact that they had some liking for Krishna, that kind of strengthened me to go further. These were the people that I somehow or other met that brought Krishna a little more into my life. They were not the ones who introduced me to Krishna consciousness, but they were like fanning the spark, although they themselves were not following. So I compared it to, well, now I'm using a negative metaphor, but sometimes you have certain diseases that you have people who are carriers of the disease, but they don't have the symptoms of the disease, but they can pass it on to someone else, right? That kind of a thing. They're carriers. And they can bring the disease to many people who all get like totally affected by it. So now in the positive sense, so someone can be a carrier of Krishna consciousness without actually practicing Krishna consciousness, but somehow or other touched by Krishna, and Krishna's in their life, and they are carriers of Krishna consciousness. Although the full surrender to Krishna's instructions and so on may not manifest in such people. So it's interesting. So even they, although their devotional service is far from matured, but even they can change the lives of many people and bring many people to Krishna consciousness. It's just like that. So in this way we can just for a moment contemplate how devotees are everywhere. Somehow or other, devotees are everywhere. And there are people who actually like devotees and like Krishna, although they don't follow and don't live it, they don't chant, they may not be vegetarians, whatever. But still, Krishna comes through them and reaches ours. In this way, so what to speak of those who are actually following, who are actually at least following, trying to follow Krishna's desire and standards of giving up sinful behavior and following standards and so on. What about them? They are even more devotees through whom, who are working as instruments to bring Krishna consciousness into the world. And somehow or other, even although they may not speak so often about Krishna, but even at work, sometimes it happens. It's even there. It's sometimes, sometimes we are not volunteering, but people begin, right? And then they're actually into it. Just like the co-workers ask, can you bring some of those samosas? Why don't you bring some of those samosas again? Where are you bringing? Like that, they'll ask. They ask. They know. They know very well what samosas are. Because, of course in Australia, in South Africa, what we in India call samosas is here called kachori and so on. But anyway, it's sort of, somehow or other, that got mixed up. What you call a kachori is not a kachori. I'm very sorry. A kachori is something else. It's sort of, it's round, it's hollow inside, and it's got some dal filling, right, with some spices. That's a kachori. That what is what Prabhupada liked. And what you like, these are samosas. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Kachori, samosas, very similar. So, not surprising you got confused. Can't blame you. Almost the same. Anyway, sorry for that. Now I'd like to go to the waters. Yeah, here's a quote. I'm collecting quotes. I went to, again, Kavi Karnapur for the second time. We're coming to Kavi Karnapur. This time to a play that Kavi Karnapur wrote, named the Chaitanya Chandradaya Natak, The Mercy of Lord Chaitanya. And because after I went to the spiritual master, I went to all the Vaishnavas, I'm turning to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because that's the only way. We cannot Nitai Pada Binavai Radha Krishna Paitanai. We cannot go directly to Vrindavan. It won't work. We must go through the mercy of Lord Nityananda, Lord Chaitanya. So formally, the Supreme Lord removed the great burden of many invincible demons from the earth. We can recall so many demons, of course. Like? Like? Who? What? Louder! Can you hear him? You heard it, huh? So soft. More demons. Who? Vodka soda, huh? Then? Yeah. Who? You know what I mean? He knows, huh? Bedtime stories, huh? So, formerly the Supreme Lord removed the great burden of many invisible demons from the earth. I think that now, with his forceful steps, the Lord is removing the earth's unhappiness by personally dancing upon them with his devotees. So, it's nice, isn't it? Now, instead of killing demons, the Lord's doing it through dancing. It's a different approach. Sort of tired of endlessly killing demons. It's like, it never ends, right? Just when you get rid of one, there is always another demon. So many. But now, the Lord found a new method, and that is by dancing upon the earth. And in this way, the unhappiness of the earth has disappeared. We recall that Bhumi, in the form of the cow, went before Lord Brahma and presented her predicament that the earth was overburdened by many military phalanxes of undesirable kings who were just no longer following the Brahmanas, or maybe only in name, but not in actuality. And thus, these kings became a great disturbance on the earth, and they maintained so many soldiers and would cause so many unnecessary fights. That's, of course, I could switch on this phone to the BBC channel, and then that's what we would get there. These demoniac kings who overburden the world. So I won't do it. Not now. But I'm just contemplating how now the Lord is simply dancing, and dancing in such a way that it's contagious. It is contagious. And that's actually the whole essence now. So it begins there. It begins with kirtan, and it begins with the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. And then we can go forward. And let us see where it will take us. Well, we can go to Rupa Goswami next, because after all, Rupa Goswami is considered to be the replica of Lord Chaitanya. It is said that Rupa Goswami was an exact replica of Lord Chaitanya. Of course, when we speak about replica, it didn't mean that he was like his twin brother and that he looked exactly like Lord Chaitanya, because Lord Chaitanya was very tall. It said that Lord Chaitanya was about 7 feet, or that means 2'10" tall. So he was extremely tall, very tall. And especially in Bengal, you can just imagine. You know, when we went to Bangladesh, right, then people were so short, that all of our devotees were sticking like at least a head or more above the crowd. And then we had like one of my disciples who's from Denmark, and he's 2 meters tall, and he is like very white. I mean, super blonde and white, you know, just white and ultra tall. And then in that crowd, you know, all these short people, and they're looking at this white giant. And he had every time 20, 30 people around him. just looking, you know. Yes, so you can imagine. And he was shorter than Lord Chaitanya. So when Lord Chaitanya was present there, you can imagine like what an appearance, what a presence, just by his length and what to say, and then his effulgence and then his ecstasy. So everyone could see him. He was like When Lord Chaitanya was dancing, everyone could perceive him. So this is very, very nice. Of course, I'm bringing you my quotes, but I'm going to ask you also that you also bring some quotes. As you are, nowadays that's not so difficult because, you know, everyone's got like one of these ultra-smart things, and if you can't find a quote anywhere, there's always Facebook where you can dig up some quote or Google or whatever. Or one can simply quote a verse from Bhagavad Gita as one remembers. So let's see. I'm just sort of planting the seed right now. So we were going to Rupa Goswami, who's a replica of the Lord, because he internally fully understood the mood of Lord Chaitanya and his teachings, and exactly not only the teachings, but also the emphasis. See, two people can teach the same thing, but the emphasis may change. I can say, by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, you can attain Vrindavan. Or by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, you can attain Vrindavan. And suddenly, it has changed. It's just wherever I put the emphasis in a sentence, the message changes. So in this way, we are all different personalities. And the spiritual masters are also different personalities. And it is interesting. It's very interesting that with their different personalities, they naturally put a different emphasis. You know, I sometimes give the example that we were in the Czech Republic, and there was a festival, and there was one of those large initiation with many spiritual masters. And that day, you know, the different candidates were coming forward, and one after the other, they vowed the four regulative principles and to chant a minimum of 16 rounds and so on. And everything went like that, and then Lokanath Maharaj is asking a disciple, a lady, and he's asking her, so, what are the four regulated principles? She said it. How many rounds she promised to chant every day? Minimum 16. And then he says, and what about ekadasi? And she looks at him like, oh no, you're not going to ask me, are you? You're not... Her face, right? She wasn't saying it, but her face is like horror, you know what I mean? Oh no, you're not going to ask me to chant these extra rounds on ekadasi, are you? And Lokanath Maharaj just goes, so, how many rounds on ekadasi? So she says, 25? And that day, it is interesting because everyone paid four regulative principles in 16 rounds, and she paid four, she paid extra. She had to pay more. For her whole life, she has to pay more. See, yeah, but that's not fair. Go to the union or somewhere, you know, complain, you know. I mean, you have a right, you know, you have your rights as a devotee. This is exploitation. No, you can't get away with this. You know? I mean, you know, it's not fair, yeah? Yes, what is good for the goose, good for the gander, one standard for all, and all that. And yet, it was so interesting. I was like really, just that day, I was observing the whole thing and thinking, this is amazing. This is amazing. Because it is personal. It's personal. It's not just, you know, according to the book. It's not just according to the rules of ISKCON, you know, or the ISKCON law book. No, it's personal. And if the spiritual master suddenly asks for more, then it's more.
Or one spiritual master may emphasize one point, and he always speaks on this, again and again. It's sort of this, this stick horse. They say something like that, stick horse? What's the word again? No, they don't know. What's the word again? Anyway, I think there is a word like that that you know about. I'm not going to look it up there. It means his favorite topic, his favorite object, his favorite thing. And that's what he's emphasizing. Right? And different spiritual masters are emphasizing different things. But how about that, you know? Yes, it's like that. Whatever our spiritual master says, that even if the emphasis is different from another spiritual master, that counts for us. Somehow or other, it's personal. And somehow or other, one must satisfy one's spiritual master. So this is interesting.
But go to Rupa Goswami,
because we are all followers of Srila Rupa Goswami. We are known as Rupa Anuga. So Anuga, Anugati means to follow. Anugati. So Rupa Anuga means the followers of Rupa Goswami. In that sense, he sets the standard. That's why I am next to Rupa Goswami. And this is from the Lalita Madhava. Srimati Radharani, with hair standing on end. What is this word, Krishna, I have heard, now a resident of my ears? This word makes me mad with bliss. Kundalata, friend, that is the nature of that extraordinary name. Even though again and again it is tasted, it is always. That's wrong. I'll start again. Kundalata. I'll start at the beginning. Srimati Radharani, with hair standing on end. What is this word, Krishna, I have heard? Now a resident of my ears, this word makes me mad with bliss. Kundalata. Friend, that is the nature of that extraordinary name. Even though again and again it is tasted, it always tastes as is. As if it has never been tasted before. Lalita. It's not only its nature, but it's also the love of the hearer that makes this word Krishna newer and newer at every moment.
So here we have two points being made about the chanting of the holy name.
That first of all, it is the nature of Krishna's name to make the listener mad. But that's not only the nature of the name. It also depends on the love of the hearer, and which makes the name newer and newer at every moment.
So these two points are there. The name itself contains this feature, that it includes so many things. Yes, I always present some memories and of my own life and mix them in. Maybe I do it because I had a grandmother who would tell us so many stories about her life, and it was always very exciting. And even although we heard these stories before, right, because grandmothers always tell the same stories, so at one point, you know, we knew all the stories, still they were good stories. Just as like on one occasion,
my grandfather got a fancy hat.
and as he was walking around with his fancy hat, some man came from behind and just pulled the hat like way over his ears, like, you know, even damaging it. Demon.
But
it turned out into a fight, a fist fight, and Grandma, she saved the day by, although she fell on the ground in the fight, that didn't deter her. She moved up the man's pants and bit him in the calf of his leg, which resolved the matter. That was it. End of the fight. True story. So, what to say, you know? It was an old story which we heard many times as kids, but still, it was always good, you know. It's a good story. She really did. So, I have my story in relation to the chanting of the holy name. And that story is that before Krishna consciousness, I became involved in some musical session, and we were improvising on the basis of Indian music, and we were doing ragas. So I did the ragas, me on guitar, my friend on piano, and then he said suddenly, let's do some mantra. And he starts singing the Maha Mantra. And at that point, I connected with the Maha Mantra. But I did not have any knowledge about the Maha Mantra, so I had no association. I heard Krishna, but I didn't see, like, you know, the old flute and silver flute today. And and all those other things, yellow dhoti and whatever, lotus eyes and shark-shaped earrings and mother of pearl nails and, you know, different moons on Krishna's cheeks and Krishna's foreheads. And of course, a tribhanga rupa, a three-bent form that Krishna displays, the reddish color at his lotus feet, which is representing the meeting of the day and the night, and then causing the reddish hue. So in the same way, when Radha and Krishna meet, there is this reddishness. At least that was what the male parrot said. The female parrot, she said that it was because Krishna was ashamed of the pastimes which happened after that. And this, therefore his feet were blushing. Well, so many of such things I can think about just now. At that time, it was just Krishna, a spiritual sound, a mantra, spiritual sound. So in this way, the hearer, the state of the consciousness of the hearer, it makes a big difference. And one thing is, the more we know Krishna. Here we speak about love for Krishna. Before loving Krishna, it begins with appreciating Krishna. And in that regards, there is a verse that I like. It is the definition of the Madhyam Adhikari. And in there, it said, Ishvara tadadinesu bhalisesu dvisatsicha prema maiti kripopeksa yakaruti samajamam. It is said, Ishvara. For Ishvara there is prema. For the Supreme Lord there is prema. Ishvara tadadinesu. Tadadinesu means the devotees. There is maitri. There is friendship. For the... hold on, now I have to start again. Ishvara tadadinesu. Balisesu. For the balisesu, the innocent, there is mercy. And for the dvisatsu, the envious one, there is nirapeksha, indifference. So in this way we see that the intermediate devotee is having this mood, and the intermediate devotee, for the Supreme Lord, he has prema. It is called prema.
It's not the praying of the topmost devotees. It's not the praying that is found in the Uttama Adhikari, who, or the topmost devotee who is crying unlimited tears and experiencing a transcendental state of being overwhelmed, which goes like beyond control. But still, the prema or the love of the Madhyam Adhikari is definitely there. And that's interesting to me because it's more accessible to us. Right? That verse makes prema, Krishna prema, more accessible. And that's why I like the verse. Because otherwise it's something so high, you know. Bring the binoculars. And we feel just, I'm never going to make it. Yeah, that's not for me, this life. You know? Like, can't relate to it. And in a way, when you hear about such exalted descriptions about Krishna praying and it being so high, it's almost discouraging to us. You just feel like, wow, I may as well throw in the towel. And I'll never get there. Let's have a couple of decaf. And, you know, I mean, you know, let's not be fanatic. Okay? Yeah. No, sorry about that. It's just because it's in the room. And yours also? It's in the room, so decaf, that's what I'm saying. It's in the room, yeah, decaf. I said, have a cup of decaf. Good. Very good. I threw it out. Anyway, where was I? I can't hear you.
Prema.
Thank you. Yeah, so it's this love for Krishna. Because the point is that Rupa Goswami, as Srimati Radharani speaking, and she's saying that this name of Krishna makes her mad. Two of her friends are commenting. Lalita is saying that's the nature of the name. Oh, sorry, Kundalata says that. That's the nature of the name. And Lalita says, no, but that's not all. There's also the love of the hearer. And now suddenly that love has been brought into a realm which is maybe approachable for us. Since I brought it in the realm of the Madhyam Adhikari. Now, let me quickly explain. For the Kanista, there is weak faith. The Kanista Adhikari is the neophyte. Basically, I don't know how it is in South Africa, but in the Netherlands, amongst kids, right, when there was an exchange of things, we would exchange things sometimes, but there was that thing that, okay, one of the things in the left hand, the other thing in the right hand, and both the kids, they hold on to both the things. And then you do like one, two, three, and you pull in with the right hand and you let go with the left hand, right? At three. Yeah? And in this way, it's an exchange, yeah? Between kids. So the neophyte is immature and is in a way, has an excessive attachment, just like children have excessive emotional attachments to objects that are not important. Right? And now, you know, a toy can be the end of the world, right? It's an insignificant toy. I mean, when my golden little jaguar got lost in the sand pit, I almost dug to the center of the earth. I mean, you know, the whole sand pit went out, and, you know, still didn't find my golden jaguar. So that was my childish attachment. But now I have matured. So we have to mature. And the canista is immature and very attached to the things in this world, which is not realistic. It's like, oh, I'm so attached to this Montosaurus, or whatever you call it. I speak. It's like whatever it is, Montosaurus. I speak French, and it's hard for me to pronounce French as if I don't speak French. You know, and say it's Montosaurus. Yeah, and now I have to say Montosaurus. I'll say it, you know, but it's difficult. So, whatever. In this Montosaurus, what if we say, oh, we can't leave here. We can't leave here. I feel so at home. I feel so at home. I can't leave here. Grow up, you know, you're staying in a hotel, you know. It's not like... it's not our house, you know, we're just here for a couple of days, right? So no point in investing so many emotions into a hotel room. It doesn't make sense. So that's the situation. So immaturity means that we have invested too much attachment in a temporary situation, which doesn't make sense because it's going to disappear. You know it. Oh, my sandcastle. Oh, no, my sandcastle. Oh, no, my sandcastle is being destroyed. Yeah, why did you build it at the side of the ocean? You know what I'm saying? Gosh, you know. Why do they build sandcastles right next to the sea? Yeah. And you see, it's always the same. And it's the angst. You make this whole sandcastle, and somehow or other, you do it next to the sea. Yeah. I mean, I did as a kid, and I don't know why we did it, but that's the way it's done, and you just do it the way it's done. You make this big sandcastle right next to the sea, and then the waves come in and destroy your whole sandcastle, and you stand there, oh no, hours of work, flood, destroyed. So, we have... a canista is attached to the sandcastles in this world. So we must learn to mature and to let go of what is temporary and to focus on the eternal. So that's the Madhyam. The Madhyam is saying, well, you know, I may have some attachment to the temporary, but I'm not going to give it much importance.
I'm going to need some water. No, not from there, from somewhere.
And yes, so be attached to the eternal. So that's Madhyam, intermediate devotee. The intermediate devotee is always putting the eternal first. So that's, well, going back with our original metaphor, to step forward, right, which I'll keep in the center in this this retreat. So anyway, I have kind of taken us to Rupa Goswami, and Rupa Goswami explains to us the difference between Kanista, the neophyte, and the Madhyam. The Madhyam, as I said, is focused on the eternal, the canista too much on the temporary. But we also said earlier on, and we go back to that, it's about the prema, the initial love that a devotee has. So that's important because it means that we do have some love for Krishna, something, right? We actually already have it. It's not only that we have to wait, you know, when is it going to come? Never, never. No, it's already there. It's already there. So that's kind of, and it will grow from here. All we have to do is water it. It is compared to a creeper. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila chapter 19, this love is compared to a creeper which grows from the seed of bhakti, and it says, Sravana Kirtanam Jala Sechana. Sravana Kirtanam Jala Sechana. That one must water that creeper by Sravana Kirtanam. So I named this retreat Sravana Kirtanam for that reason, that we water our creeper of love, which is already there, but that we water it and that it grows. And that, of course, we do on an ongoing basis, but I would think that's also what we would want out of a retreat like this. So we must water our creeper in the heart. So it's said that the heart of a man is in the stomach. They say, yeah. So therefore I needed the water. So this love for Krishna is there, and accordingly the chanting will be perceived in a different way. So I think this is really, really very, very wonderful. And I think at this stage of our retreat, I want to do something a little bit experimental, and I want to invite a guest for an interview, and I want to start with Indra Bhatta.
So we need a second chair for him, right next to me.
There's a mic.
Oh, you have another mic?
Maybe you can tell me something about how your attachment to Krishna, how that came into your life.
I know how many of you are not envying me.
You're not the last one.
yes, but this is a subject I love. It's a topic I love. Okay, I'll tell you how Lord Krishna came into my life. I was only about 7 years old and came from a very, very poor family which could not afford any pictures or frames in the house. And I went to my neighbor's house and they were quite well to do. And I saw the picture of Lord Krishna, just the face, and he was behind some pretty dark clouds. I've used this word before, and Maharaj has heard it, I think. I was fascinated by that picture. I was attracted to it, I was drawn to it. So that not only was I drawn towards Lord Krishna, I was drawn towards anything religious and has to do with God. And I got involved in many things that many types of service that we, you know, the people which had nothing to do with Lord Krishna. But that attraction is genuine. It's not like I'm making something up because I have nothing else to say. It's not that. It's a genuine love for Lord Krishna. And you know, whenever I used to see something that represents some god or goddess, I would see that, okay, but if it was Lord Krishna there, I would really probably put it mildly, skip a beat, my heart to skip a beat, and I really love Lord Krishna. So, you know, I had met anyone from ISKCON, but around the 70s, mid-70s, when I heard that there were people who were promoting Krishna consciousness, I hadn't met anyone. I decided to contribute a small part of my income towards the movement. And at that time they were in Ketoraj. And I began to contribute. And that is simply because of my deep love for Lord Krishna. And somehow I think I was able to share this with my family a little later. So that every Friday evening, when they were in high school, we sat in a group. And Friday evening, because there was nothing much to do with school the following day, we used to read the Bhagavad Gita and talk about it. And somehow, I think his love for Lord Krishna spread further. So when Ram Vijay, that's my son now, most of you know that, when Ram Vijay took the Krishna consciousness and he brought it home, you know, I really felt that Krishna consciousness became really an extension of my love, which I already had for Krishna. So, I hope I've answered the question, and that is how I came to love Lord Krishna. When somebody says, talk about Lord Krishna, I have this uncontrollable desire to make that person want to love Lord Krishna as well. Sometimes I go a bit overboard. I get a little disturbed when he is reluctant to make the change. Not to make a change, but at least show the love for Lord Krishna, which I think should be appropriate for every human being. So that is how I came to love Lord Krishna. And I hope that there will be many others here who think more about Lord Krishna in the future.
Thank you very much for being nice. And yeah, after that, and such a good answer, I should ask one more question. Now I have to think of a question. What changed when you got a connection with Srila Prabhupada? What changed in your life when when you got a connection with Srila Prabhupada?
Oh, yeah. Firstly, I read the Lilamrita Srila Prabhupada. I was really touched by many, many things that I did. Just think about one of those things, you know. When Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur asked Srila Prabhupada to go to the West and spread Krishna consciousness. And the response that he got was that, look, we are not going to make any Western country, impress any Western country with our ideas, because we are already a country that is subservient to another country, the English. And because we are subservient and not a free country, then who is going to pay attention to us? And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur gave a most, well, for me too, a most memorable response. And I'll never forget it. So whenever I talk about Srila Prabhupada, I try to quote this one as well. That is, he said, oh, don't worry about this. It's one country making mischief over another country, and it's a temporary thing. Now that, to me, was quite an astounding response, because, you know, I'm a bit of a nationalist as well. I would not like anyone to say anything against India, for example. I am like that, probably quite so even to him, I shouldn't be. And, but look at the response. We're talking about the hundreds of years of domination from the West by the English, and we're calling it one country making mischief over another country. And when you put the thing into the proper perspective, you realize that, yeah, how true that is. That we are holding on to something that's temporary. It showed how irrelevant the fact that another country was ruling India was. And all these things made a great impact on Srila Prabhupada. But Srila Prabhupada, at the time, he was also very much a nationalist. And the influence of Mahatma Gandhi was there on Srila Prabhupada as well. But only a person of that Srila Prabhupada could have made that change. You know, he grasped that thought and taught us and everybody else that, look, what is temporary? What is temporary, we did not value very much. Don't become, as you said this morning, what I said, do not become attached to something that is temporary. And then some of his disciples later on in the book, you know, when he was leaving in the airport, I'm not sure which airport that was in America, and those disciples had become so close to Srila Prabhupada, the influence was so great that they began to cry, they began to tear. And these are not really disciples who are, they were Kanista disciples, really speaking. And yet they became so attached. And what was it that brought about this impact on new disciples? So all these things, there are other things which, you know, I don't want to talk about miracles, you know, because Srila Prabhupada never wanted anyone to say what miracles he could do. I don't want to talk about that. But when you read the book, you find things that are not readily explainable. So these are wonderful qualities in anyone who does so much and yet wants not to take any any benefit of any kind from it. Srila Prabhupada was that. So I did that for these reasons. I like Srila Prabhupada. Of course, it's just a surface level. And there's so much we could say about Srila Prabhupada. Not to have the time for that.
Thank you very much. You did very well. Yeah, you made relevant points on both of the questions, and yes, love for Krishna is there to a degree, and then of course there is the levels of love that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his followers were displaying, and what shall we say? Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is what he did, it literally changed India, where this deep natural appreciation for Krishna was found in many people. Across India, you still find so much focus on Krishna. It's, I don't know if it's a great source of authority, but for some of this, the Encyclopedia Britannica is saying that 70% of the Indian population are Vaishnavas. Now, by some standard of measurement, and that like much lower percentages are worshipping the demigods. So the other 30% is broken up in various worshippers. So 70% is that by academics identified as Vaishnava. So that's interesting. So that love for Krishna is very much there in India today. But when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared, the people of India were astounded. They had never seen anything like it. When they saw these devotees that were dancing and chanting, where did they get that love? I mean, they were not just dancing and chanting, but they were just putting their full heart into it. It wasn't just music alone, but it was just they put their heart into the chanting, and they were so attached to Krishna that it was just extraordinary. It was just really something that we could not imagine. Now, I was planning to call Ram Vijay here next, but he escaped. He felt it. But I got an eye on him, because I wanted him to, but here he comes. That's very good. I'm going down the generations. So, Ram Vijay, please have a seat and have a microphone. And tell me, Ram Vijay, you went to Bangladesh, and, you know, there's so many things. Your friends almost drowned in a boat that sunk, and you took pictures of it. You went down. You went down with your friends, and I didn't take pictures, but we had a professional photographer. And he was good enough to put the camera on sports, you know, so that so we got a good shot of it. And your camera went underwater. That's right.
Yes.
You know, you were in a sinking boat. Then, like in
after going over bumpy roads and boat rides, several rivers and a real hike, talking about hiking, out in the middle of nowhere, we had to stay the night there. There were not enough mosquito nets, and you had to share a mosquito net with a Mangachi Tiger. Just to get the record straight. So there's no rumors coming about. But anyway, and then in the middle of the night,
there was a rat in the mosquito net.
A few rats in the mosquito net. And I mean, and still, he wants to go back to Bangladesh. Can you tell me why?
I think you're crazy. Bangladesh, there's many things that are so attractive about Bangladesh. The first thing, of course, that overwhelmed us was the local devotees from Bangladesh. They were just the most humble, simple people we've ever met in our lives. They served us hand and foot as if, you know, we were someone special. That's the entire group. It was like maybe 30 devotees in our group, I think. 30 devotees. They served us amazingly, and they just won our hearts with the way they behaved. They just, our hearts were won over. So that is what we'd like to experience again, just see those devotees and try and pipe some of their wood. That was one. And then, of course, there are so many wonderful holy places in Bangladesh, which, I mean, until I went there, I never knew. We always thought of Bangladesh as a separate country, a Muslim country. Why would there be so many holy places? But we went, they marched us to wonderful places, the homes of Jagannath Mishra, Sachi Devi, all Lord Chaitanya's associates. They originally came from Bangladesh before they ended up in Mayapur. So all these wonderful holy places were there. And as usual with Maharaj, everything's an adventure. And it was a boys-only trip, so it was even more adventurous. Boys only, just austere, no doubt. But in the austerity, there was so much of fun and excitement. And, Advaitacharya's birthplace, I mean, the area of the birthplace is consequently a temple. That's the excursion we went on. Two boat rides, one car ride, one 4x4 ride, and then walk. Two ages, and there's absolutely no electricity or anything in that place. The devotees have a generator and a partially built temple. At 10 o'clock, the lights go out, and it's pitch black because there's nothing in that area. And that's when the mice come out, the ones that you're sleeping next to. But it was so much of fun. Mark had these wonderful kirtans and talking about these pastimes. It just absorbed us. It took us out of our normal state of consciousness into the pastimes, the kirtans, pastimes of Lord Chaitanya. And so that's why we would do anything to go there again. Nothing. There's no price too heavy to pay to go
there. So can you say something about your relationship with Lord Chaitanya?
There's not much to say, except, of course, like you mentioned this morning, and that was the first time I understood the concept so concisely explained about how you borrow from him. You borrow from the others. And so sometimes I thought I was developing some kind of good relationship, but actually, I was wondering why it was always finishing after the treat or the special function ended and the association left. And now today I got to understand that that was just borrowing. So, we had some wonderful times. At times you feel very... I mean, Lord Chaitanya, in a sense, he's different from Lord Krishna because we can identify with him so much more, especially with his kind of devotees, the feasts, the kirtans. You know, we can identify with Lord Chaitanya. But still, he's on a different level from what we experience. I mean, you see Lord Chaitanya's symptoms and the symptoms of his associates and how they carry on. Actually, when I read the books before coming to ISKCON, I thought that's how everyone responded to me. And I was so disappointed when everyone wasn't just steeped in love of God, and they weren't just like in ecstasy and talking the way they were talking Krishna's pastimes. But so there is definitely a difference from what we experienced. But yeah, but the association and constant hearing and good association, sometimes you feel close to Lord Chaitanya, you feel that you can taste something of what those devotees have experienced by the mercy of other devotees who've got those experiences and taste. So yes, so we can relate to Lord Chaitanya and we can feel close to him, appreciate what he's given us, how he's taken such a lofty thing and made available to all of us, like Srila Prabhupada and his servants.
Yeah, I was also thinking about Bangladesh, and I thought that in Bangladesh, the devotees, they were very conscious of Lord Chaitanya, very much. I mean, they were like really absorbed in that, more so maybe than, just all Lord Chaitanya, Panchatattva, and I don't remember so much Krishna, Krishna, more Gauranga, Gauranga, very much so.
Yeah, they, you know, like how when you go to Vrindavan, everyone says Radhe, Radhe, and there's so much of that. In Bangladesh, you see that a lot, and it's very unusual because you don't experience that anywhere else. I mean, I haven't experienced that anywhere else. Those devotees were so naturally at home in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes and his places. They were just, it was just normal for them to be in that mood and talking about Lord Chaitanya and his pastimes and his places. And they also, I felt, they were very proud that all that was in Bangladesh. Yes. They're the most humble, simple devotees, but they really felt very wonderful that all these places Lord Chaitanya were in their own country, in their place. So they were very, very attached. And it was natural, it was just like normal for them to think and talk like that. It wasn't, oh, we'll talk about Lord Chaitanya, and no, this is what they just did. And we'll talk about the priests and the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, so like I had at the time I had read different books and I began to realize that there was something out there in Bangladesh, so I wanted to go. I had not been myself, but it wasn't what I expected, because what we had thought, that we would go to holy places and we would get absorbed with our group in the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya, and that was my plan, to really get into it in a deep way. What I didn't realize that that Bangladesh was going to happen to us as well, and it was. For example, we went to this place where the story goes that Narottam Das Thakur had a special appearance, because Lord Chaitanya, he went to the Padma River, just which is a branch of the Ganga, and Lord Chaitanya, he was there in the place of Kanai Natashah, very close to the place where Rupa and Sanatan lived at the time with the Nawab Hussein Shah, in the same area. And they were, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was on the side of the river, which is now India. That river is the border between India and Bangladesh. So, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was calling out, Narottam, Narottam, Narottam. No one knew who Narottam was. And everyone, is there a Narottam? And then, in the future, on the other side of the river, Narottam appeared there, and then finally Narottam came there to the river. Now it is said that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he was there,
he deposited Krishna Prem in the river. And the river, the Ganga, just spontaneously overflowed and just flooded the whole city, the whole town in ecstasy. Anyway, and the Ganga said, what will I do? I cannot contain this. This is too much. This is too powerful. He says, don't worry. You know, when Narottam comes, you give it to him. But how will I recognize him? You'll recognize him, you know, at the time. So anyway, Narottam grew up and he appeared after Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had left the planet. But Narottam heard everything from those who had been around and who were devotees of Mahaprabhu. He was just after. So it was a very kind of difficult generation, you know, just missed Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Even we feel close 500 years, but can you imagine if you listen by just, to calculate how many years, but, you know, 30, some 30 years, some maximum 50 years. So Narottam really felt, oh God, I missed out. I just missed out. But then he heard everything from particularly one devotee who was living in the same area where he lived, and told him everything. And then, by hearing about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Narottam became so ecstatic. Now, Narottam was from a wealthy family, a zamindar family. That means they were holding large areas of land. And the system was that they were ruling this land, but they had to collect some taxes from the land and pay to the government. So that was the system. And whatever profits they would get, they could keep, and they were wealthy. So anyway, then what happened was, when Narottam heard all about Lord Chaitanya, he became so ecstatic. And that one day, he went in ecstatic love into the Ganga. And Narottam had a darkish complexion and lotus eyes and long arms. And in a way, he looked a bit, he reminded of Krishna. Didn't look like it, but he reminded of Krishna. And when Narottam took his bath in the river there, he turned golden. He got touched by that Krishna prem and he turned golden. And when he came out of the river, even his own mother didn't recognize him. That's not my son. This one's golden. That's not mine. Sorry. Yeah. So that was quite something. Anyway, we went to that place. We came there and there was a little branch of the main river and he said, it's here. And he said, no, we want to go in the main river. And we got a, and said, like, well, we'll get a boat and we'll go there. I said, well, there are no boats here. He said, yes, there is. There's a fisherman's boat there and we'll rent it. He said, you can't rent it. I said, you can rent any boat in Bangladesh. And you could. There was no problem. We rented the boat and we went to the middle of the river and we just all jumped in there. And we were like, we didn't want to come out. It was really nice. It was warm and it wasn't so deep. We could even stand, you know. So we just, we were ready to stay there for hours. And then they said, no. Some of the local devotees said, no, we have to go. No, we have to go now. We have no time to go. I said, no, we have no time. We came for this, you know. We traveled so far to do this and take time. And then they took us to this theater in the city nearby, Rajshahi. And there was like this theater filled with people, 1,000 people, and the mayor was there, and all kinds of dignitaries were there, all to see us and the white elephants and have this program with us. And that was also Bangladesh. Every night they would hijack us, you know. Gosh, we drove with the car. They stopped us, they stopped the car. Take me somewhere. I said, no, we have to get out of the car. I said, we have to get out of the car. Yes, we have to get out of the car. I get out of the car.
and they come somewhere and there is some stone covered with cloth, and they say, pull the string, pull it, pull it. So I'm pulling it, and it says, this building has been inaugurated by Kitab. I just inaugurated the building, you know. Okay, then we drove on, and we came to this place, to Sylhet, you know. We're coming to Sylhet, on the way to Advaita Charya's birthplace in Sylhet. Anyway, they suddenly, again, stop the car. This man comes out from nowhere and puts like a big bunch of flowers in my hand. Knocks on the window, the car, wind it down, take the flowers, okay? Couple of flowers. Next moment, there's 50 motorcycles appearing. And they go in lines of two in front of us. And each motorcycle has two devotees on it, one driving, one in the back. The one in the back, they stand up on the bikes and they call out, Karanga! Nityananda! And slowly we drive through the Muslim bazaar, you know, like this. And I'm sitting there with my flower. And next moment, the devotee, who is familiar with Bangladesh, who sort of was helping us in getting around, he says, I'm just going to check into the hotel now. And he just gets down 100 meters before the temple. Then when we get to the temple, there's 7,000 people converging upon the car. They pulled me out of the car, and I didn't touch the ground. They just carried me through the air. Then somewhere in the middle of a pathway, there was a Vyasasan, and they threw me on top. I just landed like mid-air, boom, on this Vyasasan. And then there were bowls for foot wash and all these things, and there was no question of talking about it. They were washed. The feet were washed. And then they picked me up again and carried me in the temple and threw me on another Vyasasan, gave me a microphone and said, Kirtan. So it was quite an experience in so many ways. The Bangladesh experience was also, besides these holy places. But actually that added to the experience of Lord Chaitanya. It brought it to where the enthusiasm of people, where the congregational chanting of the holy name, where everyone together is just so enthusiastic. So instead of like going into the places through the text of the Chaitanya Charitamrita 500 years ago, we were there in the middle of it right now, in the thick of it, getting a feel of that overwhelming enthusiasm and that overwhelming generosity. Like Ramji was speaking about the serving, it's like we said, like, well, we had experienced that in one of the towns, that when we stayed in the temple, that it was total chaos, but that they could also put us up in apartments next to the temple. So we suggested that. Suggest, yes, no problem. And there was an apartment, yes, you move in. And we said, okay, we'll move in. And then, Sajak, the people will move out, it's just for you. But they didn't move out. They were also there. So there's this whole family there. And they're doing the whole thing, you know. So, okay, there's a living room and one room. I got the one room. And everyone else was in the living room. So it's 11 o'clock at night. And the people are like, have cooked a lot of things. And one of the devotees says, like, I would like to sleep. He said, oh, you want to sleep? Oh, okay, just sleep. Go there in that corner and go sleep. Just go sleep. Meanwhile, they are eating like this huge feast, you know.
like by then it's midnight, and at 3 o'clock everyone's up, and at like, you know, 4 o'clock they blew conch shells and they had a big Mongol Arctic in the house. I don't know if they have that every day, but I think at least because we were there, they definitely had. Sure, it was an experience and a half. But so much enthusiasm. There was a mutanga player, he had little sticks on his fingers. He put little sticks, and then he was like, out of this world. It definitely was an other dimension.
Yes, so our mix is complete this morning. We are seeing that Srila Prabhupada brought Krishna consciousness to the West. We're seeing that through the Vaishnavas, Krishna consciousness stays in our life and comes further into our life. There's devotional service. Where there are Vaishnavas, there are all these spiritual activities. And then we went on and we just really turned to Srila Rupa Goswami, because Srila Rupa Goswami is the one who has formulated our Krishna consciousness exactly in the mood of Lord Chaitanya, with the same emphasis. And we went through the definitions of the Kanista and the Mahajan, and we realized that the intermediate devotee, the difference between the neophyte and the intermediate devotee is that the intermediate devotee focuses on the eternal. And the Kanista, his focus is on the temporary. So Kanista, all the weight is on the material leg. And then what happens is, yes, prema ishvara tadavine subhari sejavik sacha, prema mighty perfection, yakuruti samajima. And we spoke about how even a madhyam adhikari can have love for Krishna. And a love for Krishna is natural, natural. And how that love will naturally increase the more we find out about Krishna. It's not like a mystery of how to develop love of God. It's natural. It just comes by hearing and by serving Krishna, by associating with devotees, and in those ways it will develop. And then we had some real life experiences from Indrabhatta and from Ram Vijaya, and of course later on we'll do some more of those things. It's of course always helpful if we follow the system of sending a sheet around so that we can write questions on there, because I know that's the local custom. But does anybody have a question that they would like to talk to? In addition to the relationship with the spiritual master, is there any other relationship that is eternal? Yes, the relationship with all the spiritual masters, with our spiritual masters, is there. Just like Srila Prabhupada, that relation is there. Rupa Goswami, that relationship is also there. We are basically in the party of Rupa Goswami. We are aware that who Rupa Goswami is in the spiritual world, and that makes it easier to understand. We are aware that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is none other than Krishna. And we are aware that Krishna, Radha and Krishna, are
are accompanied by the Astasaki, these eight principal gopis, right? And these are like the immediate servants of Srimati Radharani. The leader amongst them is Lalita. Lalita comes back in Chaitanya Lila as Swarup Damodar Goswami. And Swarup Damodar, or Lalita, her immediate assistant is Rupa Manjari, who is none other than Rupa Goswami. So they are in Radharani's own party, and the essence of their service is to put a preference in serving Radharani over Krishna. So they're in the party of Radharani and they're serving Srimati Radharani. So that is actually the line of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It is the line of Radha Dasya, of Radharani's own party. For we are learning that no one can please Krishna as much as Radharani can. Therefore, we are eternally Gopi Bhakta Kamalaya Dasana 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 Dasana, eternally the servant of 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 Srimati Radharani. So like that, we have eternal relationships with many personalities in the spiritual world. In fact, we were speaking earlier on this morning about Chitraketu Maharaj and his son, and a question also came up about that son. And we discussed a little bit then in depth how the son had become detached from the current situation and was just by death, and had then a different experience, seeing himself more over many lives. But of course, that was still a conditioned state. If one becomes actually liberated and reinstated in his original spiritual identity, then we also belong to a certain family, and we live in a particular quarters in Vrindavan. And it's like a homecoming. And it's like there is an eternal family also there. You know, that we are part of. Of course, how we fit in, we can't figure out. That's a bit premature, but that's the situation. So there will be many eternal relationships with. And it's even possible for relationships that start in this world amongst Vaishnavas to continue in the spiritual world. But exactly what our sarup will be, that we will see, what our original identity will be, that will manifest later. So we're not quite sure. Maybe, you know, now we are close to a Vaishnava, and in the spiritual world, one may be a cowherd boy, the other may be a gopi, I mean, all these things. Or one may be a kalpa vriksha or a parrot. Who knows what we will be? The spiritual world is something else. I was reading the other day about the spiritual world, and I was reading about Mother Yasoda and the whole Damodar Leela, and then there was this particular point that the spiritual world is quite different from the material world. In the material world, if you want to know if the rice is cooked, you take out a little rice and you just push and see if there's no heart in the core. The core must be soft also, right? Otherwise it's not cooked. So in the spiritual world it's different. It's quite easy. You just ask the rice, "Rice, are you cooked?" And the rice says, "Not quite." So who can understand the spiritual world? It's just like, who can understand that? Yeah. How does that all work? then what if you eat the rice? What's the rice going to say? Oh, the rice. Do you like it? Or some say, no, you eat the rice, but the rice is still there on the plate. It's all like too complicated. I think we'll only understand it fully once we get there. Yes, we want to invite more questions if there are. Yeah.
So you mentioned how just because you're chanting that you become devoted doesn't mean that our life is going to be smooth sailing. So oftentimes in confrontation with our reactions or positivity, we react under influence by the mode. So like we react probably in a very bad way. So understanding that maybe you're not ready to react in a, understanding the idea of mode of goodness reaction and that you're not yet there, what would be then a good way to respond to a confrontation with your past reaction without...
Okay, I can't repeat the question because too many words, you know, but I'll try and summarize it. Nimai is bringing up the point about how, as in relation to the morning class, how we cannot just expect that immediately our material lives will just be smooth sailing, but that we may expect some hardships. Then he's bringing in the modes of nature and saying it's difficult to get to the mode of goodness due to conditioning, and sometimes we're confronted with a quality in ourselves that we don't really want, but it's there due to old conditioning. And how can we rise above this? So when this morning I was referring to the effect of devotional service, I meant to say that it's not that the external conditions are going to be just suddenly perfect just because we are devotees. Right? It's not that nothing bad will ever happen. Yeah. It does happen. And so what to do? But as far as our own internal affliction by the three modes of material nature and by the lower modes, tadara jistamu bhava kamalubhadiyasthi mateivaditam vidishtittam satvapasidati, the influence of passion and ignorance disappears and we become situated in the mode of pure goodness. So it's a transcendental platform. Now, before we are in the mode of pure goodness, we are in mixed goodness. And when we are in mixed goodness, it means we are making a conscious effort to act in the mode of goodness, although we still feel passion and the pushings of passion and ignorance in us. But we try as much as possible to act in the mode of goodness. And thus, we learn to control the mind, control the senses, control anger, control lust, vata vega, manasa krodha vega, jiva vega, udra pasta vega, eta vega, yuvasa heta divasa vam, abhimankita vimsa sisya. So it begins with the pushings of words, the pushings of the mind, the pushings of anger, the pushing of the tongue, the belly, the genitals, all these pushings we are facing. But we try to fix ourselves initially in the mode of goodness, we become, and it is a struggle, and sometimes we may lose, but it should not
we should not let it get too much out of hand. And then we gradually become purified. If we let it get too much out of hand, you know, then we're gonna make some offenses. And then that's gonna cover over our bhakti for some time. We're gonna lose taste in spiritual life. So one has to be careful to avoid offenses. So in the beginning, we get this whole package, you know. Do this, don't do that, do all these prescribed duty. So let's practice this, to act according to proper Vaishnava behavior. So this Vaishnava behavior, how does a Vaishnava behave? We have to practice it. And then gradually, it starts to emerge from the heart, spontaneously. That's later. So, now, I don't know how long your attention span is in sitting on a chair, but some begin to look dizzy. So what shall we do now? Shall we have a permanent break? Shall we have a short break and then have a little more kirtan? Yeah? Okay, shall we just have a bit more kirtan and then call it quits, and then have lunch, and then we'll have an evening program, but even before that we'll start again with some kirtan, because this afternoon we don't have an excursion, because it has to be organized, and wasn't possible to organize for today, but for tomorrow we can try and do something. And as I said before, we wanted to do that according to the weather, and leave early in the morning. So it would be a scorcher this afternoon. Everyone would melt, and there are no trees out there. It's hot. And I looked around for trees and forests and lakes, but didn't find that much. I found the, what's this called? The stag, what's that called? I looked at my phone. Stergfonteindamm. But I googled pictures of it, and there's not a tree there. It's a nice dam. There's water everywhere, but not a tree, so it's not a scorcher. And, you know, these dams, I looked at some more pictures and then saw some pictures of big snakes swimming in the water. So I go, So I start to stare from time to time. I think we'll let it go. Although it's 43-minute drive from here. At least it seems like that. So I'm looking into the possibilities, because as we inquired from the reception, they said there's not much of hiking trails from here. So we've got to figure out exactly where to do it, and that will organize this afternoon with Naveen, because he is our local scout. So you please bear with us in that regards. So I think what we'll do is instead we'll just meet again at 4 for some kirtan.